commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show, episode number 25.
Trading our transcontinental Portela ninjas for cheap Tolkien elf I can't say this.
Our
transcontinental Bordello ninjas for cheap Tolkien elf knockoffs to save our sisters from the evil warlord of Thane.
Our tagline's a monster this week.
Right. Thanks for that.
You're welcome. I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And this week is news, which should be very interesting or not. It depends on you, whether you care about science.
I care about science.
Yes, which is why you're going to introduce our first story.
Our first story is that CERN has managed to trap antimatter for the very first time. They've been creating anti-hydrogen specifically since about 1995, but they have not been able to observe it or trap it until this point. They have now created a sort of magnetic bowl, and within that bowl they were able to trap, I believe, 35 anti-hydrogen atoms. And the hope is that eventually they will be able to trap it for more than a second, which is all they've been able to do at this point, and use it for things like power. Because when you smash antimatter with matter, it releases a huge amount of energy, and they want to be able to harness that for unlimited amounts of power.
Yeah, the specific thing is an ion trap. Mm. So kind of like, you were right with the electromagnetic, but specifically it's an ion trap in creating a vacuum, and then it's cooled to 9 Kelvin, which is apparently about negative 443.47 degrees Fahrenheit. And
cool.
For those of you that are over in the UK, since we know there are some of those, that's about negative 264.15 degrees Celsius. Which,
and the reason they had to slow it down this much, basically the reason they had to cool it is so that they could slow the atoms down.
Right.
Because otherwise they move way too fast for them to contain them.
Right.
But by going down to that temperature, they're really slow, and then they can get held by the electromagnetic bowl.
The ion trap. I just think the ion trap sounds cooler.
It
sounds like something
trap.
Out of like a science fiction movie, the ion trap.
Well,
Captain, we've been trapped in an ion trap. Like, it won't make sense, because like, what? Like, doesn't make sense, but at the same time, it just sounds cooler.
It does sound cooler.
Yes. You could even add like some sort of fake word on the front, like trilathian ion trap.
Ooh. So,
see, because that's like mysterious. You could write a whole story like, what is that? And then you find out it's
just... Haven't they already used trilathian for something in Star Trek?
No, I invented it.
Oh, okay. Well,
and if not, Gene Roddenberry owes me money. So.
Or you owe him money.
No, I don't. No.
Okay.
That's my idea. I'll go back in time and plant it. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I guess that's pretty cool that they finally, you know, trapped it. It's not nearly as cool as when they actually stopped light, but...
That was pretty cool.
I think that's
pretty cool. Or created the actual Big Bang.
Or when they actually transported matter over a short distance, as in, like, Star Trek transported when they went, meep, and it went, meep, on the other end. Yeah, that's pretty cool, too.
It is cool.
Yes. So, yay, science!
Yay, CERN!
Love
that.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. If I were smarter, I'd work for them.
Yeah, but instead you're just going to go into politics because you're...
I'm not going into politics.
Oh.
Not anymore.
What?
Got other projects now.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, so the other sort of scientific story we have is actually probably the geekiest story we've heard of since the one we broke a few weeks ago on the Batman program at the military. Because this one is not just using like a name from something. It's actually using the thing to deal with a real condition. So
right.
Out from New Scientist is that Tetris, you know, the classic video game. You know, everybody knows Tetris being on the Game Boy. My grandma played it
yeah.
until her hands stopped working. is now actually being used to treat post-traumatic stress disorder.
So spiffy.
Yeah. So especially among soldiers, obviously, who have flashbacks in soldiers. So Pete, they're more likely to be disabled or to die from accident or illness than those who do not. And so now they're using Tetris, and I guess volunteers who play Tetris for half an hour after looking at graphic images of injuries have fewer unwanted memories of the image as a result.
Well, I mean, I think the one issue with this is the fact that with a soldier who has PTSD, this is something that they would have to do directly after an experience. It's not something that they can do days later, because the way it works is that your brain actually doesn't develop the images, the memories of the images, for approximately 6 hours. So during that period of time, if you play Tetris, it actually hampers your brain's ability to make those connections, the perceptual right. experience, and, you know, anything else. So yeah, so if you play it directly after, you're good for go. Not completely, it just lessens the number of flashbacks that you'll experience, and they're not as strong. Hello. Don't
turn
do
off
that
your
to
sound
me
effects, you jerk. I'm trying to send you a secret message and it's all bloop bloop
bloop bloop. Anyway,
yeah, but yeah, anyway, yeah, this is pretty cool that they're finding out that Tetris, because then, I mean, this is the cheapest thing the military could buy. A bunch of Game Boys with Tetris, like, that's, I don't know, like $5,000 for every soldier to have this in their back pocket. So.
Exactly. So when they wander around, they go through a fight, and then they play Tetris for a few hours, and they'll be good.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Presumably. What's interesting, too, to me is the fact that if they play verbal games, because they had three groups, one that played Tetris, one that played a general knowledge game, and then one that didn't do anything. And the ones who played Tetris had fewer flashbacks and not as bad.
Mm.
The ones that did the verbal general knowledge game had more flashbacks than normal. So who knows why, but for some reason, I guess your brain just, you know, that, who knows? Maybe Tetris is mindless enough. I don't really think it's mindless, but
more, I guess maybe, I don't know.
Automatic.
Automatic, instinctual.
Right.
Exactly. Or maybe it requires you to concentrate more on what's going on the screen because the game gets progressively more difficult and blocks move faster.
Yes.
So maybe it's requires, so your brain is maybe directing its energies towards this very intensive.
Right. The specific experience. Quote is that they believe it's the visual spatial work places an additional burden on the perceptual systems.
Okay.
And those ones that interfere with memory forming. So,
so kind of what I just said, but in more sophisticated terminology.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah.
So
very interesting.
So to sort of move away to something that is, I guess, probably one of the most important things
ever.
Okay, well, no. Related to one of the most important films to be released in the last, or at least within my lifetime.
Oh my goodness.
Well,
Blake Vault.
Yeah, but it is, really. Let's think. I mean, the franchise itself is so massive.
It's true.
And the books are so influential. So it's kind of, yeah. But anyway, so the Quidditch World Cup, there is actually a Quidditch World Cup.
There
it's
is.
It's a college game that they actually go to different schools. There's bunches and bunches of teams, both in college and in high schools. And they had just had the World Cup, and there officially is a winner. And the winner is, was it Tufts?
No, Middlebury College.
Oh, Middlebury actually won. Okay, I'm sorry.
Right. And what's interesting about this is Middlebury actually is the originator of the game. They're the ones that have, you know, gone around to all the other campuses and said, you should start a team. And they solidified the rules for the game. So I suppose it's not that surprising that they won, although Tufts apparently put up a really good fight, but that's the two final teams were Tufts and Middlebury, and Middlebury took home the prize. What I think is hilarious about the prize, though, is that it's a statue that literally falls apart directly after receiving it, and then they get new brooms, like Harry Potter-style brooms, which is slightly epic.
Yes, they're kind of little replicas, and they're kind of, I don't know, it's very, they get it really into it. We don't have one here at University of Florida, and I'm not going to start one, but, no, because I have crazy religious people here, and there would be,
yeah.
they tell me I was burning in hell for riding on a fake broom and running around Which I'm like, I'm just having fun. Like, that's not that big deal, guys.
But yeah. It is a very amusing game to watch, and the rules. I mean, just watching the snitch run around like an idiot is hilarious. Because the snitch in the Quidditch, the real life muggle Quidditch game, the snitch is a person, a very fast person, who literally just runs around with a little ball in his belt. And if they catch him, they get 50 extra points. If not, obviously, you know, they don't. But yeah, it's amusing.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if you have been paying attention, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, the first part, is coming out as on the 19th, which is technically, we're recording the day before it comes out, but by the time we've recorded, it'll have been out. So it seems perfect timing for them to have a Quidditch World Cup. That's like free publicity.
Right?
like dorks have, you know, total ridiculous dork fest, and Harry Potter makes $2 billion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's going to be pretty big deal, I think. Draco Malfoy, of course, is going to die. He doesn't really. I just made that up.
I think everybody who listens to us probably knows exactly what happens.
Yeah, they know exactly what happens. Well, they don't know what's going to happen in the movie. Well, they know the general idea of what's going to happen in the movie, but they don't know what they cut out. So, but anyway. Yeah, so that's coming out. It's going to be fantastic and wonderful, and we should have lots of fun with it.
I will definitely have lots of fun. Yeah, we're going to watch it either Sunday when this podcast comes out or right after Thanksgiving. So we'll see.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, this is somewhat, I mean, the fact that Harry Potter is this massive book franchise and obviously very influential on children, this last story is very depressing and makes me want to just destroy mankind with a zombie apocalypse, because a new study from Reader's Digest has revealed that 1 in 20 youngsters have never read a book.
That's...
yeah.
Really depressing.
Yeah, yes. And apparently 9 out of 10 parents are worried about falling literacy levels, with a third blaming mothers and fathers for failing to encourage their children enough. Well, if 9 out of 10 of them are concerned, and a third of that 9 out of 10 are blaming, that, well, then you're blaming yourself, too, because clearly you're concerned about it, and your kids aren't doing it, you, whatever. But it's... well, I guess the one thing, we didn't look this up, and we probably should have, didn't look up if the numbers had changed in the last 10 years. I didn't look that up. I should have looked it up before we did the show.
That's true. I would be curious to know what that number is. But I got a feeling
that pre the sort of young adult boom, that maybe the numbers would have been worse. But I'm assuming by youngster they mean like 13 and under, and not...
I would suspect that it does mean, yeah, 13 or 12 and under.
Okay, so in that range.
Elementary school children.
That's really disturbing, because I know teenagers have had that. There's been, you know, this constant trouble, like they're not reading, and I can understand they're in high school. They don't want to read anything else. They've stuck with Shakespeare, and they hate Shakespeare, and they want him to die, but they don't realize he's already dead.
I still hate Shakespeare. but... yeah. I mean, well, the interesting, I mean, high school, you too have to look at the fact that most high school kids honestly don't have a lot of time to be reading for fun. They've got a lot of schoolwork. The standards, I don't know about the rest of the country, but I know in California, standards have gone through the roof for what they expect of kids. And that includes elementary school age. I mean, my children are doing, they're about to start on, I don't know, things that I swear I didn't start until I was in junior high, and they're in third and fourth grade. But anyway.
True. Well, I mean,
there is a lot of pressure on kids. Yeah. Exactly. There is a lot of pressure on kids at high school level to be concentrating on their specific studies, which means it does not leave a lot of time for outside reading. But that's not true of elementary school kids. There are programs, sure. You know, where I live, my children participate in something called, I've mentioned this before, called accelerated reading. And it essentially rewards children for getting a number of points. But what's interesting about this is that the standards at their new school are way lower than what they were at the old school.
Oh, well, that's because you live in a Republican district.
No, actually, I don't.
Just teasing.
Surprisingly.
Politics.
But like my younger daughter, her last semester of her second grade year received 100 points. The books are on average, I'd say, about 7 points per book at the grade level she's reading at, 7 to 10 points or less. It depends on the book. It depends on the number of words in the book and the difficulty of reading that book. Right. So anyway, she got 100 points, which meant she read, I think, something like 20, 30 longer books over the course of the second half of her second grade year. The goal for her class, which is an accelerated class, supposed to be an accelerated class, was only 30 points for the entire year. They aren't doing individualized totals either. Whereas their last school, they had to, you know, each kid was given, based on their interest in reading, for one thing, and their ability, they're given different goals. So in the beginning of the year, she actually only had a goal of 25 points, you know, and that's like, depending on what she's reading, that's like, you know, can be about 10 books, 10 very short books. And then, but there were other kids that only had goals of like 15, maybe 20, you know, or less, potentially. Because, like I said, it depends on reading level. Right. But it was really disappointing, you know, the fact that, but it is, it's, what I'm saying is, it's a program that tries to get these kids to read. The whole country doesn't have that. Not everybody has programs like AR. And not everybody has parents who push reading as much as I do. But it was interesting reading this, because one of the things that it said was that, you know, parents think that the decline in their literacy rates amongst children is the fault of parents. This is what parents are believe.
It is.
You know, it's my fault that my kids aren't reading.
It is.
But kids think that they would spend more time. I mean, they say that it would help if parents spent more time encouraging them. But the most significant, and this is a direct quote, the most significant influence on their behavior is what their peer group is doing.
Right, which, but the problem is that's influenced by the parents.
Exactly. So it's kind of a...
You know, so it's like this evil, vicious cycle.
Vicious cycle, exactly.
You know, you're reproducing...
If not enough children are pushing read, if not enough parents are pushing reading on their kids, then more kids are less likely to read and blah, blah, blah. It keeps going and going. Which is, you know, a bummer. A huge bummer. I mean, kids need to read for fun. But a lot of the problem, too, is that they're reading in school. Right. I guarantee that they're reading in school. Even these kids that say that they've never picked up a book, they have picked up a book in school. It's the outside reading that is concerning. If they're not picking up any books outside of school, then they're not really, they're not going to grasp the same level of literacy as a child who is. They're never really going to get past that point where, you know, school is important, yes, but what you do outside of school is just as important.
You have to use the skills you learn in school.
Exactly.
If you're not using them. And it's not just, reading isn't just about having a reading level. It also influences your ability to write. To use the language. Right. So if you're not I wouldn't say an avid reader, but somebody who reads at least somewhat on your own time or enjoys reading, you're not taking skills you learn in school and then applying them and allowing that to sort of influence, like to like burn itself into your brain.
Right.
And so
exactly.
Then you end up, you know, people who aren't very good readers, and then people who also aren't very good writers. Which is also, it's just, and of course I'm a teacher, so, but I teach, let me put it this way, I deal with the results of parents being lazy douche nozzles and not teaching their kids to love reading.
Well, yeah.
So I'm telling you, parents, if you don't do it, Santa Claus is going to come after you.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll totally break your eyes. And then you won't be able to read.
Okay, one of the other interesting statistics from the study, and granted, it's totally not a scientific study. I mean, it's like a Reader's Digest poll, basically.
Well, it's a poll.
Not really a study.
It's not a full study. Yeah.
Right. But I think one of the interesting things was is that more than half the adults said that they had difficulty getting their children to read. And I'm going, how is that difficult? That's really not difficult. You sit your kid down in a freaking room, and you hand them a book and say, read it.
Or you don't... You don't just pander to what they want. You teach them to read at a young age. You read with them, and you teach them to love the stories. It doesn't matter what
even,
your kids are reading, as long as they're reading.
It's not even so much the doing it with them, because I barely ever read with my kids. I really didn't. But what I did a lot of reading myself.
Right. They follow you.
And children tend to, they base their behavior, to an extent at least, on what their parents, what they see their parents do. So if they see their parents loving reading, And it doesn't even matter what it is. It can be in the newspaper, you know, it can be anything.
Sure.
But if they see you sitting there and taking the time to read, they will follow that. If they see that it's something important to you, they will take that as an example and they will read. Because sure. I really did not at all read a large amount with my kids. I mean, I always have. I read to them, not every night, but every other night, every few nights.
Mm-hmm.
I would read them a children's story or whatever. But they saw me reading constantly. And I guess that worked for me. I'm not saying that it's not a good idea to read with your kids, because it helps with their general understanding of books.
Mm.
But it isn't the most important factor. But what's sad, I think, about this is that not only did half of them say they had a hard time getting their kids to read outside of school, but then they also said that they blamed the fact that the kids are more interested in computer games or video games, which I find stunning.
You're a bad parent. You're a bad parent.
Exactly. I let my kids play a ton of video games. I let them watch a ton of television. And guess what? They're still reading for at least an hour or two a day.
And is it because they choose to read?
They choose to read.
So
not only that, I also have, but they have chosen reading time where they sit down and they choose to read themselves.
Mm.
But then every evening at bedtime, they get an hour to read. The only thing they are allowed to do in bed, they can either go to sleep or they can read. They aren't allowed to sit there playing video games. They aren't allowed to do, you know, random other stuff. That's their time, quiet time, where they have to sit down with a book and read.
Okay.
And it's a really simple rule to enforce.
Right, right. Well,
you know, I don't know. And I'm not trying to, like, disparage every parent in the world. I get it that it's hard, but it's not that hard.
Yeah, I guess the only good thing to take of it is at least it's 1 in 20 youngsters, not 1 in 10.
That would be...
Because then out of 100, that's 5 in 100.
That would be really, really sad.
So, I mean, really, 5 in 100 youngsters have never read a book. That sucks, but there's still 95 who have.
That's true, but it does say that a third only pick a book up occasionally, and that's...
That
and not quite
too.
As sad, but it's still
well, the study needs to... We need somebody to actually go through and look at all of the minute factors. You know, what is it? I mean, why don't they pick up books? Is it because maybe they live in certain kinds of households where certain kind of books aren't allowed?
Aren't allowed.
So the books that are allowed, they don't want to read. You know, exactly. There's so many questions to answer, but we don't have that information, so we'll have to wait for another study to come out.
Well, I actually have my suspicions on why some kids don't read, but... They're probably offensive to certain segments of the population, so I'll keep my mouth shut.
Alrighty. Well, that pretty much does it for news. There's a whole bunch of other stuff we didn't talk about because it was just lame. Yeah. But we'll probably talk about it later.
You thought it was lame. I thought some of it was cool.
Well, Sam Raimi making a Triffids movie was interesting, but...
Sam Raimi's making a Triffids movie?
Yep.
That is interesting.
I knew you would like that, but I didn't put it on the docket. So, we're going to go to the music real quick, and we're going to come up with our question of the week, which is actually geared towards really getting your guys' help. Or we just really want your opinion on something about the podcast. So, we'll do that, do reading, writing, question of the week, and then we'll close out the show. And so, yeah. So, we'll be right back. And we're back with our reading and writing segment. So are you reading anything new, Jen, or can we just skip you?
You can skip me.
Great. Totally useless you are.
I'm sorry. I'm still working on the end of Mr. Y, which is still really fabulous, and I almost finished it last night, but I didn't quite get there. I am reading Never Let Me Go next.
Oh, well, fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm excited.
All right, well, great. I'm reading a whole bunch of stuff.
You are?
Yes.
Of course. Well, you have to.
Well, yeah, I have to. So, first thing I'm reading is Connected, or What It Means to Live in the Network Society by Ooh. Stephen Shaviro, which is from my sci-fi utopia class.
Stephen Shaviro! I like him. He's the one that has a blog.
That's totally random information. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
That.
He's yeah. the blog that I love.
Okay, well, I'm reading his book. So.
Wow.
Yep, that'll be good. Okay. And then the other thing I'm reading On the Name by Jacques Derrida and Counterpath by Jacques Derrida. That's for my Derrida class that I'm doing because I'm writing my paper. That should be terrifying. And then I just started reading The Poison Throne by Celine Kiernan, and we're hoping to set up an interview with her, so that'll be really good. So that's what I'm reading, and Jen isn't writing anything because she doesn't know how to write.
Oh, my goodness.
As you know.
No, I don't. I'm writing a business plan.
This is true. You're working on starting a newspaper, which is...
I am.
Which is interesting. And I am currently writing some short stories. I'm writing something else. I'm writing something based on a weird dream I had. So that'll be fun. It's going to be really... It's weird. It's deja vu all over. So yeah, but I don't really have anything specific to talk about at this moment, except... that I've got stuff in the pipes, so hopefully I'll finish it, and then I can get rejected 100 times. I'm looking forward to that.
I know you are.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite thing in the world to do.
I do. I love it. So, yeah, so that's that. So our question of the week, as I just mentioned earlier, is something geared towards getting the opinion of people who listen to this. So,
and hopefully improving our show in the process.
Yes. So our question of the week is...
how long do you think a weekly podcast show such as ours should be on average? 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or an hour?
Or
you
other.
Can also, yes, leave us a comment and tell us an other.
Yeah, if you don't think any of those times work, you can let us know. So we really would like your opinion because we're doing a weekly show and we want to streamline it as best as we can.
We're not very good at that so far. We keep trying, but, you know.
Yes, well, we're getting on top of it now. Because this should be under 30 minutes now. So anyway,
woohoo!
So you can, of course, if you want to send a more detailed description of if you want to criticize the show or let us know what you like and dislike or whatever, any of that works if you'd like. You can do that by email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
Twitter.
Twitter.com/SkiffyandFanty.
Or anywhere on our blog.
Yes, SkiffyandFanty.wordpress.com.
So... obviously, you can leave a comment there, and we'd love to hear from you. And if you don't comment, we will cry.
We do that every week.
We do. Yeah, we say that every week. I say that every week.
Well, no, we actually cry every week, too.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Oh, I black it out. I
cry.
I drink and cry. So I don't remember my
weekend.
You're
turning us into alcoholics, people. It's really not. It's not cool. I mean, I know I started my first show drinking.
Sharded.
Shut up. I started the very first episode of my involvement on the Skiffy and Fantage show drunk.
Fantage show?
Fantage. I can't talk today. It's obvious. Maybe I have been drinking. Or at least I haven't had enough coffee. Maybe I should add some Kahlua and then I'd be good.
Anyway, so we'd love to hear from you. And next week we have a good discussion coming up between a certain author. Which should be fun, and we've got a whole lot lined up for you guys. So
over the next months, yeah.
Oh yeah, the next 2 months are gonna be awesome.
Awesome. Yeah,
they're gonna be more awesome than we already are, which is at least 2/3 less than awesome.
To quote a character on a popular sitcom, it will be legend. Wait for it, Derry.
All righty, we'll see you guys next week.
Have a good one.
Autobots, roll out!